What's up, guys? Welcome to the Divvy Crypto Podcast. My co-host here is Jeff McCabe, the CEO of Divvy. And today we are going to be talking about gardening. Isn't that right, Jeff?
Yes. I was very excited to talk about something other than crypto for once.
Exactly. So we kind of added a buzzword here to the episode. We decided to call it, I guess, decentralized gardening when we were talking about it. But a quick background on this was I've had a few friends reaching out to me that live in San Francisco and New York, and they're trying to create little gardens within their homes. They're trying to create gardens outside. I even have a friend who's trying to create a product to help people do it. And it's just a really important concept right now with everything that's going on. And Jeff has a significant background in gardening and permaculture. And I really wanted to just share me literally sitting down with Jeff and learning about how to start a garden. So Jeff, if you could just walk through what is permaculture is the terminology, right? That's what people call it.
Yeah. I mean, with permaculture, people often think of it as gardening, organic gardening, but organic gardening is just one part of permaculture. Permaculture is a sort of the combination of green building and sustainable living in many ways, like how you relate to your community, how you relate to your workers and staff and your friends and the people around you. And gardening is just one aspect of it. And there's different types of gardens. So permaculture has different zones. That, you know, zone one is basically your garden right next to your house where you may have your herbs or your lettuce, things that you use all the time. And zone five is the wild jungle where you may, you know, scavenge a few things here and there, but pretty much you don't do anything with it. And in between is everything between your garden and the jungle or the forest. There's, you know, like zone four is a semi-wild forest or jungle where maybe you planted the trees, native trees, but the trees you want sort of mixed in with the jungle, and you've done things like growing vines, local vines on trees. You know, like I live in Costa Rica, so we have things like native fruits that we can eat, like guava. We have cacao. We have a whole lot of native plants. So some of those can be put into the jungle to grow there. We have stuff that grows in the shade really well. Like there's a food called katuk, which is a small tree. You can eat the leaves, so you can just stick that in the jungle, and that would be a zone four thing, as opposed to zone five. So it doesn't matter whether you're in the jungle or whether you're in the forest. I mean, you're in Florida, right? So yeah, it's something in between. You've got a jungle, sort of. But it's cold during the winter there. So here it's never cold. So it's different, you know, but it still applies. And this goes it's the same thing for Alaska, all the way down to the tropical jungle. You've basically got these zones that go between completely controlled and completely wild. A lot about permaculture is about how you interface between those two different, five different zones in your living space, and make sure everything kind of complements each other. You know, you want to make sure, for example, that your water source is clean, that your septic systems dealing with your poop and any kind of waste products are not contaminating other things, or you're using them in the right way. So that's basically, usually permaculture is not about specific things to do. It's more about how to think. We talk about a pattern language, a language of recognizing patterns in nature that we use in permaculture. And we have certain principles. And actually, a lot of these principles apply to cryptocurrencies. One of those is called stacking functions, where you basically try to find one structure that can do multiple things. Like on our farm, we have a geodesic dome that we built that does multiple things. For example, we use it as a shade structure, and we grow passion fruit vines on it. So it produces food, but it also produces shade. It's also a gathering space. So it has three different functions in one structure. And that's not the way traditional agriculture is. Traditional agriculture is very, very linear. One, you don't generally use your cornfield for anything else other than growing corn, right? It doesn't also become a soccer field or something like that. Mm-hmm. So if we had some sort of edible grass, we could make a soccer field that is edible, you know, and that would be an example of stacking functions.
Stacking.
So, So if you want to ask me about home gardening, that's what we're really talking about, is sort of like biodynamic gardening or deep bed gardening or hugel culture. There's different types of home gardening. People listening to this, a lot of them may, if you live in apartments, you can grow a tremendous amount of food in a very small space if you know what you're doing and understand that your first order of business with gardening is to grow really good soil. So you need to learn about soil and what it is. There's some great documentaries that teach you, and they're shocking actually when you watch them, because you realize how little you know about this stuff that you walk on all the time. Just kind of like if you think about how little we all know about actually what's going on in our own bodies, it's the same thing about how little do we know about the soil that we walk on top of every day, right? If you're outside, you know. So just to give you the basics, right? There's, when you're trying to make a garden, you want to have basically deep soil, at least 2 shovel depths deep. And basically that soil is filled with all different types of biological life. And that biological life is going to work for you or against you. So for example, plants, they don't just take nutrients out of the soil directly. They work with fungus to do that. So you need to create an environment that has the right kind of fungus that will be able to break the minerals apart and transfer them over to the roots of your plants. So most people have never heard of that. There's all kinds of great videos explaining how these things work and how trees actually can communicate with each other underground through an underground network of mycelium fungus. And that happens in your garden too. So for example, right now we decided to build a new garden because it's just the beginning of all this craziness with COVID, but we've already had people calling us up and saying, you know, I don't have any money and I don't have any food. Can you give us some food? And we're thinking, wow, if people are already calling us now, wait till 3 or 4 months into this, because, you know, Costa Rica, everybody in the area is reliant on tourism. And if there's no tourists because of either the virus or people just can't travel or they have no money because of the economic collapse, then everyone's going to be going hungry and they're going to be coming over here. And if we don't provide food for them, they're just going to take it. They're going to come in and they're going to come at night and take our food. So we're making new gardens and we're planting like crazy. We're trying to plant sweet potatoes. But anyway, my point with this is that we just dug up a whole bunch of what looked like perfectly good soil in a really nice flat area. But when you look at the soil, there's no worms and there's also no mycelium. You should see this like sort of white webs of sort of, you know, almost like spider webs. And that's the mycelium in your nice black soil. This dirt, not really soil, that we dug up was kind of reddish, kind of brownish, kind of light coffee colored. I was thinking it would be blacker. I was hoping to find a few worms here and there, but there wasn't any. So that means we have to go and improve it. So what we did is we went and we scraped in the jungle, just a lot of leaves, and we scraped up a lot of just like sticks, dried grass, weeds, anything we could get, and we're mixing that into the soil. What that's going to produce is basically a lot of celluloid material for worms to eat. We don't have any worms. Our worms are actually killed and eaten by rats and army ants. A while back, we had a worm box, and now we need to find worms. So what we're going to do is we're going to go and find logs that have fallen over in the jungle, roll the logs over, and underneath there, we're going to find all kinds of worms. So we'll grab them, we'll stick them in our soil, and they will start eating that material in there. They can eat almost anything celluloid-like. They can eat cardboard. They can eat dried leaves, dried grass. They love cow manure, all kinds of stuff. So we just kind of mix the stuff in there. They poop out what's called worm castings. And that's like the blackest, most perfect nitrogen-filled stuff for a garden you could ever want. Now, we're in a rough place for growing stuff. I mean, if you go and come to the jungle, you think, wow, it must be really easy there because there's just giant trees everywhere. Everything's alive. It's warm. That's all true, but our soil is only about an inch or two deep. And there's pretty much no worms in it. Underneath there, you kind of get into red clay, gravel. There's nothing alive. It's just pure mineral. Most people in the United States or Canada, when you walk out and start digging around in your garden, you're going to have better soil. You're going to probably find worms in your backyard more than you'll find here. Mm-hmm. And we're actually in extremely difficult conditions. It's not exactly a desert, but a desert would actually be easier. It would be easier for me to be doing this in, say, Southern California, which is a normally a desert climate, because you've got a lot of airborne fungus and tons of bugs and animals that will attack what we have. As soon as we finally get stuff growing, you're going to see there'll be an army of creatures that comes out of the jungle and tries to eat it all. So we have to be prepared for war against nature in a way. And that's what's interesting about permaculture, is we try to develop a system that turns that war into more of a synergistic situation. But at the end of the day, there's only so much thing, only so many things you can do. There's still going to be a lot of sort of pests that are going to attack you. Most people, like with traditional gardening in the old days, I'm not talking about the really old days of traditional gardening, but the old days since, you know, basically the early 1900s, you know, you plant some seeds and then you spray them with chemical fertilizers. And then if you have bugs, you spray them with poison. And then you feed those to people, and people don't know that they're eating poison because they can't see it. It's invisible. And it's just somehow that system, which is insane, has become normal. So to the point where people don't even care, you know. So we're basically trying to find a better system for that. And right now people know that. And so organic gardening is becoming more and more popular. And at this point, because of people being stuck at home and because people are worried about the collapse of the monetary system and all this, it's amazing how many people have become interested in gardening.
Yeah.
So there's so many really great things now on YouTube that show you how to do it, how to do this in containers. What I recommend, if you have enough time and are able to do it, there's something called Hugel culture. Hugel is H-U-G-U-L culture with a K. It's actually a German word that means hill culture. And what you do with that is you basically like dig a hole and fill it with logs and wood. And then you build your garden bed as a sort of a tall hill on top of it, tall, long hill. And if you do it right, you'll have a shady side and a sunnier side. So you can put plants that like the sunnier climate on one side, shadier plants like maybe lettuce on the other, and it's tall. You don't have to bend and squat all over to work on it. You're going to get more surface area and the same. You'll have twice as much growing space and the same amount of space, and you'll have phenomenal drainage. And plants love drainage. Unless they're swamp plants, they love the drainage because they're up high now. When they get water, the water just goes through the. It's and anything extra rather than pooling up and possibly producing root problems like root rot is going to pour through, and it's going to wet this all this wood that's piled up underneath the soil. Over time, that wood turns into sort of a spongy material, and your roots can tap into it, so they can pull out minerals from it, they can pull out water from it, they can do all kinds of stuff with it, and it becomes this phenomenal growing situation. When we've done experiments here, stuff grows like 3 or 4 times better and faster than other ways that we've done it. So I highly recommend it. But it's a lot of work to set up. But I would suggest for most people who have, you know, a backyard, it's a really great way to do it because you can do so much in a small space. And eventually you're going to have these hugel cultures that are mature, and you'll be able to produce a tremendous amount of food in a very limited area.
Got it. Got it. Well, you covered quite a lot there. So to go to out of the thousands of people that are going to listen to this, let's say half are based in cities, and they're sitting in their apartment right now, and they don't come close to zone 4 or zone 5, where they can't go to the jungle and roll over a tree and get these worms, but yet they're very aware of organic and keeping the food that they're growing, not full of chemicals or being brought up within soil that has chemicals in it. So for those people, what would you recommend if they go to Home Depot or Lowe's or to their local nursery or whatnot to find that soil? What would you recommend someone that's a beginner who's trying to find soil, who doesn't really have, the the worm resources, we'll say, that you do and some of these other really experienced farmers have, what would you recommend for somebody like that?
Well, the first thing that people need to be aware of is that a lot of people's soil outside of their houses is really toxic. And the reason is, and this is going to be shocking when I tell you this, because most people have never thought about this. Old houses used to have lead paint. And when you repaint, people grind that lead paint off. And they don't have any device to catch that. It becomes lead powder that falls into the soil around their house. And then it's there. It's just lead. And you are eating lead if you're producing a garden with that, right? And it's incredibly bad for you. Yeah. So it's important to know that if you're in an old house that, and they were using lead paint until probably the 60s or 70s, I'm not sure. Yeah. So if your house is not newer, there's a good chance you have lead paint. So this is one factor a lot of people stops people from gardening because they just don't want to deal with it. They don't even want to think about it, right? So what you can actually get a soil test. So you can get a sample from a few places in your garden, send those samples out and find out if you do have lead. If you don't, then you're okay. If you do, well, then you can build, a good idea is to build one of these hugelkultur beds, but you build it basically, you can order these metal things. So it's basically like a hugelkultur with metal sides. It's about the size and shape of a table. And you basically just get one of these things, and it has sort of corrugated steel that's rust proof. So you might be like, say, 20 feet long and 3 feet wide. It's like a big table. Then you fill it 2/3 of the way with wood. Then you get fill dirt delivered to you, and you mix in whatever you want into that. You know, you can put dried leaves and grass and stuff like that. And then you throw that in there, and you have 3 feet deep of wood and 1 foot deep of soil. And then you start working, then you can just garden. It's really nice because you're not bending over. You know, it's right there. You can stand up and work. It's much faster. It's much easier. It's more fun to do it when it's just not as hard, right? You can do more work in a quicker amount of time, take care of more space on your own, and focus on the part you want to do. Another really important thing besides these hugelkulturs is just the idea of mulch. When I was a kid and growing up in Seattle, we never used mulch. We didn't know what that was. You know, my mom would have me going out there and digging the stuff up. We had really good soil. It's probably full of lead. God knows what it did to my brain, but we would grow stuff, but we never mulched anything. And there were so many weeds. So you constantly have to go out there and get the weeds out. And those weeds, their root systems compete with your plants. So you have to constantly pull them out. Those root systems also can entangle with your plant's roots. So when you pull them out, you also are ripping out the roots of your plants. So mulch is basically a sort of dirt mixed up with dried leaves, with little sticks, wood chippings, cardboard. People use cardboard, you know, waste paper, you know, those toilet paper rolls, you know, this, anything like this, right? And you basically take this mulch, and some people mix dirt into it, some people just use mulch, and you just put that, you cover your entire garden with it. A lot of people hate mulching, like our staff here at my eco-village here in Costa Rica, they just hate mulching. They try to get out of it. They don't like to do it. They like to buy hay bales and just like do it because they don't like to make it. But hay doesn't have a lot of nutrition. Good, things that are good for mulch are like wood chips, because wood chips come from trees that have deep root systems that have pulled minerals from deep into the earth that your plants need, rare earths and other elements that are not commonly understood to be beneficial in the system. It's one of those things, you know, if you look at how gardens work, they'll basically talk about nitrogen, potassium, just a handful of minerals, but they really need probably more than 100. And a lot of them they know they need, but they don't even know what they do. They just know if they remove them, your plants won't grow very well. But they don't know what they do yet. There's so much left to learn. So anyway, with mulch, you basically surround your plants and all the soil with 2 or 3 inches of mulch. And it does so many good things. For one, it creates a weed barrier, right? So you don't have many weeds. The weeds that do get through them are generally growing in very loose soil. So you just pull them out super easily. It also basically keeps water in the soil, so you don't have to water as much, especially in dry climates. That's really useful. It produces, it has carbon and minerals, so it's breaking down and it's creating a system of having nutrition for your plants and also stuff for your worms to eat and other things like worms that are beneficial to your soil. And it does a whole bunch of different things. It prevents erosion from rain. It prevents your soil and the life at the top of the soil from being destroyed by intense sun, ultraviolet light. So there's at least five important things that it does. And if you look at a jungle or a forest, there's mulch everywhere. You know, they call it leaf litter, right? The leaves of plants are raining down. They create this barrier. And it's a natural part of any growing system. And it took a while for people sort of in Western agriculture to understand this. And so more and more we're kind of learning. And with permaculture, we've learned that it's really important to go back to these basics. You're going back and looking at what did people do 200 years ago before all these poisons were invented. And we go back and we look at, just look at natural ecosystems and how do they self-manage? How do they grow? Somehow all these plants are out there growing without any human intervention. It seems like a miracle, right? Like nobody's planting them. Nobody's fertilizing them. Nobody's preventing the erosion, you know? So something's going on there. So the whole thing is kind of ironic to me because my great-grandfather was the head of agriculture for California and one of the inventors of what was called at that time the Green Revolution. At that time, the Green Revolution was chemicals and poisons. They brought them in, including my great grandfather. They brought all this in, and it was a miracle, right? They learned that they could, you know, spray nitrogen based chemicals. They were made from petroleum products on all the plants, and they could grow stuff out in the desert in California that never could grow there before. He was the first one to bring in strawberries and all this. And at the time they were, you know, hailed as heroes because they learned to produce so much food it was very instrumental actually in preventing starvation, but they didn't realize at the time the damage that this is going to do. And they just sort of didn't pay too much attention to the poison. They figured, oh, well, you know, just a little bit of poison and we'll wash out most of it. And it was so successful. And from a monetary point of view, it was, you know, a matter of competition. You could outproduce your competition. You could underprice everybody. And so if you weren't spraying poisons and using that, you weren't going to be able to survive. And so the economic system created a necessity for this. And now, you know, it took until like the 1960s when people realized that we needed to go back to basics. And so organic gardening started. It turns out that my uncle, who's still alive, actually, he's a big divvy holder, actually, Tom Wilson.
Nice.
He's Tom Wilson. You'll see him every once in a while. He was one of the first organic farmers in Costa Rica. He was on the national board that helped set the standards for the USDA.
Wow.
US Department of Agriculture, yeah. And I think he set up the first like organic packing house in Southern California. And it's interesting. My family has this history of being important in farming. And so I'm doing this here in Costa Rica, and it's been fallen very natural to me to do this kind of stuff. Although I've had to learn all this in the last several years. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I was forced to garden by my parents to get my allowance money, right? So I could play video games and buy Dungeons and Dragons stuff. So, but in the last 10 years I've lived here on this organic, you know, doing an organic farm and just learn more and more and more. And YouTube is fantastic. And every year somebody comes up with something even better than the year before. It's just amazing how much this is. And it's technology, you know, it's not silicon-based technology, but it's knowledge. It's all kinds of cool stuff. And it's really, really fun. I get inspired every time I go on YouTube. I just get sucked into looking at new gardening techniques. And I think about how I could apply them to our particular situation here. You know, it's really a challenge. And like anything, it's brain intensive, you know, you have to really think about so many variables farming is not easy. You know, it's incredibly difficult. And so for somebody like me who loves an intellectual challenge, farming is as hard as anything on the planet. It's phenomenally difficult. I mean, there's so many things in the soil going on. There's so many little pests and invisible things like nematodes. What are nematodes? They're tiny, tiny little worms that you can't see. But some of them are good and some of them are bad. And the bad ones do things like they create these little nodules on the roots of your plants. So you need to learn what to look out for. And they affect each different plant differently. And there's different things to get the good nematodes to help you and the bad ones to go away. And there's all these cool things you can do with mixing different types of plants, growing them together. So you get a 1+1=3 kind of thing. They call it plant guilds. So if you grow these two plants together, one of them will protect the other from bugs, and then the other one will help the first one absorb more minerals. There's these kind of things. And there's millions of combinations of these. So trying to figure out the right ones for you and your situation, your soil, you have to really pay attention and watch and stare at everything. We've had so many situations that are really interesting. Like we had plants that were dying and we didn't know why. And so we looked and we found, oh, there's these bugs all over them. These nasty looking bugs, you know, they're crawling over. Oh, we need to get rid of these things because they must be eating the plant, right? But then we stop and say, wait a second here. Let's really pay attention. Let's watch what are these bugs actually doing, you know? Have you actually seen one chomping on the plant? No. So let's watch them. And so you sit there and you watch and you watch and you watch. And then finally you discover that these nasty bugs are actually eating the bug that is destroying your plant. They're actually helping you, right? They're the predator of the thing that's ruining your plants. And here we've, you know, at first glance decided that they were the enemy and we're planning, you know, I'm starting to squish them between our fingers, this kind of thing. So you really have to pay attention. And with cryptocurrencies is like that too. I really have come from this point of view when I entered the cryptocurrency market of really paying attention to what's going on and watching the different sort of ecosystems of how the different players in crypto work. And it's really, I think it's helped divvy the sort of long range experience of watching how things evolving and realizing things like airdrops. What do they actually do? It's like it seems like a good idea to create awareness, but in reality, it has a lot of bad effects on your ecosystem and these kind of things, right? So, farming. You have any specific questions? Like how to get started? I would say decide on what your growing space is going to be, and then go on YouTube and look up experts that are going to tell you exactly what to do, where to buy it. In our case, I'm thinking like, what can I make it of stuff in the jungle? But you guys in the States are lucky. You can just order stuff and it'll ship it to you. And a truck will come and deliver a bunch of dirt to you on your front yard on a tarp. And you can use a wheelbarrow and take that where you want it to be. Mm-hmm. Or you can do, if you have an apartment, you can do container gardening on your terrace. And there's stuff that doesn't need a lot of sunlight that you can put a bunch of stuff growing just in your window. It'll grow in the winter inside. You can even get some grow lights, right? And grow stuff like that. And it's pretty amazing if you go look at like what you can grow a phenomenal amount of sweet potatoes in a small space. And they're really delicious and one of the healthiest foods in the world. But look up sweet potatoes. That's a fun one.
So in terms of two-part question, A, what are you growing in Costa Rica? Because you shared a little bit about what you're growing. And then the second part is on a spectrum of difficulty. If it was brand new person living in Manhattan with a little bed of soil just starting out versus where you're at in terms of difficulty, the different things that you would garden or recommend. So what you're growing and then the difficulty of like the most difficult plant versus the easiest.
Yeah, sweet potatoes and potatoes are really easy. Mm-hmm. So you can just... There's these amazing systems where you can get like a barrel and you just start growing potatoes and you just keep putting in every day. You put in like another 1/2 inch of dirt. You just keep putting in dirt and putting in dirt and putting in dirt and putting in dirt. When you get to the top and you dump it all out and the whole barrel is full of potatoes. It's like crazy. You'll have potatoes in a barrel. In a barrel, you can grow like 400 pounds of, I'm making up numbers, but it's, you know, some insane amount of potatoes in a barrel and you're not doing anything.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
It's this crazy things where you can like grow stuff upside down. You can grow like watermelons on that are like growing up in the air, you know, and all of the watermelons, and you make these little hammocks that are supporting these watermelons that are just growing up there, and other kinds of squash. So it's going to depend on where you are and what season you're in, but pretty much everything's easier to grow there than here. And part of the reason for that is because we're trying to grow stuff here that we are used to eating, because I'm from Seattle. So I want to grow the kind of stuff that I want to eat. If I was just to grow native Central American tropical foods, like there's a bunch of root vegetables, that's just not what I'm used to. There's a lot of sort of starchy things like yuca that I like it, but you know, I want to eat carrots and potatoes and some of these things that I'm more used to. Tomatoes are a really good one. You can do so much with it. You can make pizza with it. You can make pizza sauce. And tomatoes are a miracle, because if you grow them at home, they taste like a completely different food than what you buy at the grocery store, even an organic one. If you grow a tomato at home, it'll be 100 times more flavorful than an organic Whole Foods tomato. It's like they're not even in the same category of food. You know, they look the same, but it's crazy. You know, they pick all these things when they're green, and then they ship them for a long time, and they just don't have any flavor. They need to be ripen in the sun on the vine to taste good. And boy, they just taste so much better. And it's the same thing for everything. So when you eat stuff from your own garden, it tastes so much better. You don't even want to eat stuff from the store anymore. You know, that's why I think restaurants in the States and American food in some ways has become so bland, because people just have to pour tons of salt and sugar on it to make it edible. People have forgotten like how good food can be. So it's fun. It's really fun to have even a small garden and just have friends over. And people are so excited to like eat a salad that has your own homegrown tomatoes. And it's really fun to just give hand your friend a cherry tomato from your garden, have them try it, and just watch their eyes light up. They're like, oh my God, I just can't believe what they're eating. You know, it's almost a divine experience, you know, eating stuff for love. In lettuce, you should see the difference between when you pick a piece of lettuce and eat it out of your garden. If lettuce, the moment you pick it, it starts losing its flavor so rapidly that if even an hour or two later, it tastes like almost nothing. But if you eat it right out of the garden, it's so flavorful and delicious. And it's really fun to have simple things. Lettuce is pretty easy and it grows really fast. Mm-hmm. So that's another one you can grow. Here, it's really difficult. Of the, you know, 50 types of lettuce we've tried, only one or two will grow well. Spinach, of course. I think kale is a good one. Kale grows really easily, and you can use it to make green drinks. Green drinks are super, super healthy. They're almost kind of like a cure-all for everything. And you can, it's good. I think it's a good idea to have like, also have a goal. Like you want to just grow stuff because it's fun, or are you going to try to improve your health? You know, mm-hmm. If you're going to try to improve your health, a good way to do that is to grow green, is to have like a green drink for breakfast. And, or, you know, three or four times a week, you don't have breakfast except for a green drink. So then you need carrots, you need a bunch of greens like chard or kale. Then you buy some green apple or banana to throw in there to sweeten it up a bit. And that will, you'll notice it'll make a massive difference in your energy and in your overall health when you're eating raw greens every day.
Mm-hmm. So in terms of turnover, like let's say I have a box, it's in four quadrants. I have my sweet potatoes, I have my, let's say lettuce, I have my tomatoes, and I have squash or something growing in my four quadrants. How soon would I be able to, if I picked all of them tomorrow, how soon would I be able to reuse that soil? Or would I have to get new soil completely?
You mean the moment you take something out, you're already planting the next thing in there. So like it depends on what it is. Carrots grow really slowly, but lettuce grows really fast. So what we do is we have a little nursery where we grow stuff in sort of these flats that look like egg things. You know, like they hold a dozen eggs, but they're instead of being 2x6, they're more like 10x20, so they hold like 200 little tiny tiny little compartments that are about a half inch by half inch. And we fill those with potting soil and we put little seeds in them and you get a whole bunch of little starters. Then we move those to smaller little pots. Pots are about this high and this big around with dirt. And the seedlings, when they get, you know, the lettuce will get about this big or the kale or whatever it is. We have rows of these going across. And then when they get to that big, then we move them into the beds. And so the moment you take some, you take out something from your soil, you're already putting something back in. You're always adding new stuff too. If you have, you can get on the internet a worm box that does nothing but produce worm castings. It's really cool. Basically, you have these multiple layers. One or two layers have worms in them. Other layers have like their droppings. And you kind of are moving these layers. Every couple of weeks, you're moving them over, adding new material. The worms go from one to the next. They eat through it and they go up to the next one. And you take out this tray that has now the worm castings that you can add to your garden. So, and then, you know, you're eating your carrots and all your stuff and you take all the, you chop off all the skin and all the leftovers and you're throwing them in the worm box for the worms to eat and, or you're making compost. And so you're constantly making these soil implements that, so you're taking stuff out, but you're also putting stuff back in. And you're constantly nurturing your soil. You're looking at your soil and, you know, you're smelling it and it should smell like soil. And after a while, you get to learn to recognize what it smells like. And again, lots of good YouTube videos that show you what it's like. And you'll know, I mean, if you go to, you got to find somebody with a good garden and have them show you what their soil looks like. And when you turn over a shovel full of soil, there should be worms in there. Mm-hmm. I remember when in Seattle, we would do that. There'd always be worms there. I was so scared to accidentally cut one in half. I felt so bad for them. Somebody told me that you cut one in half. Don't worry, it grows into two more. And that made me feel a little better for a while until somebody said, no, that's not true. They die. So that was sad. But so yeah, so you can constantly just using, growing a lot of things. And you, I like to do what's called polyculture. And so what you're basically doing is putting a lot of different, mixing a lot of different plants together. It helps to read up on like the guilds that work together. There's certain things they'll tell you not to grow next to each other. Mm-hmm. Other things don't really matter. And if you know something about the root structure, like you can sometimes find lists, like what plant is has deep roots and what has shallow roots. And you can put the deep planted ones, the deep rooted ones next to the shallow rooted ones. And so they can be closer together. So if you think about it, if the roots are really shallow, they tend to grow out. And you put them too close together, they bump into each other. But if you have plants with deep roots here, they can go right next to the ones with shallow roots because they'll go and take apart the soil underneath. So there are people on the internet that have figured all this out, you know. And I recommend it, that people go and find people that are doing this in their city. They know what to do, you know, and they'll tell you, oh, you know, you can grow these eight plants in a box 1 meter by 2 meters and you'll have enough food for two people for dinner for three or four nights a week, you know, in a tiny amount of space, right? Once it gets going. There's also people that are making things that are just completely like grow rooms, like for people that grow marijuana, right? So you can just grow stuff indoors. And they have water systems. People love tech. Like a lot of crypto people are into like the tech aspect, right? So you want to have like a robot arm that waters your plants. And this guy, it's totally unnecessary, right? But people like to do it. It's fun. It becomes a hobby. That how do you grow plants with doing the least amount of work and have it just sort of happen to be automated? So if that's the kind of challenge you want, then that's the kind of thing that's going to appeal to you. Mm-hmm. Permaculture. With permaculture, we're trying to just be, the idea of permaculture is that you produce this garden and it takes about 8 to 10 years. But after a while, one person can manage the whole space and it just grows food by itself. And it all, you know, all the animals leave you alone because of the way it's built and you never have any erosion and you don't really need to do much because it's just been wonderfully designed. That's the permaculture dream, right? The reality is not that perfect, but that's where we're going towards, where it's all self-managed. You have all these systems that sort of self-manage because of your brilliant design. And that's going to be different for every piece of soil and every climate. It's like in Costa Rica where I live, it's extremely different the climate where we are, as opposed to, or we're about 600-700 foot elevation. If you're at 3,000 feet elevation, it's a totally different climate. It's not as hot and humid. Don't have as many animals. So they have like miraculous growths of, and they can grow carrots because they have cooler nights. They can do all kinds of stuff that we can't do here. I'm always jealous of them because they always, you know, are showing pictures on the internet of what they're doing. And I feel like the runt of the litter down here where we are, it's very tough. So the good thing is that once you do get going in our climate, boy, you can grow a lot because it's always warm, but it's hard. It's harder. It's taking, we've been doing this for 8 or 9 years, and I still feel like we have so far to go as far as being able to grow stuff. It took us years to get carrots to grow. Yeah. And we finally discovered we can just grow them in sand. You don't even have soil. You just grow them in sand and they grow great. So,
permaculture is basically like a perpetual motion machine, but except with a garden. Like it's just a constant.
Yeah. Yeah. The garden is part of it, but the garden is integrated into your lifestyle, right? So, the idea is, you know, you have a beautiful garden, but that garden maybe has a center area that also is a place where you go to play with your kids, and you have an outdoor eating area there, and that has a tree there that provides shade. But that tree is not just a shade tree; it's also, you know, an orange tree, and you know, or maybe it's a lemon tree, and next to that tree, you know, you have a pond, and that pond helps to keep the water. It helps to catch water runoff, so you don't have water eroding your gardens. But you also have tilapia in there, and from the tilapia, you can make sushi, and you can also take lemons from that tree that's next to the tilapia tree, and you can make what do you call it? Where you take raw fish and you basically cook it in lemon ceviche. You know what I mean? Like you take all these things and you put them together in this beautiful lifestyle, how everything helps everything else. Right. And, you know, then you want to keep out, you have this problem with deer. So what you do is you make a ring of pineapple bushes that are really sharp and spiny. And you put a ring of those all around that prevents the deer from coming over, you know, if you have a problem with these kind of bugs, then you discover that there's this kind of local weed that these bugs really don't like to eat. So you mix that in with all the plants that they do like to eat so that when they smell it, they just stay away, and you trick them into not knowing that what they like to eat is actually there, and they just leave. So, and it may turn out that plant has really deep roots that also is pulling up a lot of it's maybe a nitrogen fixer, so it's making a lot of nitrogen in the soil, you know, so it's doing more than one thing. It's basically, it's creating mulch when you chop it down, it's preventing certain bugs, and it's also producing some mineral compounds or nitrogen that you need. So over time, with a lot of discovery and really paying attention and reading and talking to your neighbors who are hopefully doing the same thing, you can discover the magic solutions that make all this work really well. Mm-hmm. That's the permaculture dream.
That's fantastic. I did not know that. Now I'm going to slowly but surely fall down that rabbit hole for a couple of days now.
Yeah, it's fun. It's really fun. You know, in Costa Rica, I'm getting so many calls. Everybody right now is worried that we're on the collapse of civilization and the monetary system, and people are thinking a lot about growing their own food, wondering what they're going to eat, and becoming very interested. So I'm getting calls, I'm getting emails. People are rethinking about their lives, and they see what we're doing here. And a lot of people have been thinking about this for a long time, and now this is kind of like the straw that broke the camel's back. And they're like, you know, I should move to Costa Rica and screw all this rat race in the States or in Europe. It's funny, you know, in the U.S. we talk about everything's about consumerism and the rat race and all this. But I talk to people in Italy and France, and they all say the same thing about their countries. Everybody says exactly the same thing. And they're all coming to places like Costa Rica in search of a better life where they have more time in nature, and their kids are growing up being able to run around, you know, big fields of grass and play in the jungle and climb up trees and get scratched up. You know, maybe my daughter every day comes and shows me a new scratch on her knee or elbow, you know. We go and we put a band-aid on it, you know, this kind of thing. And a lot of kids, they don't have that anymore. They're growing up in cities, and they're just on their devices, just playing video games. And we only allow our daughter half an hour in the morning and half an hour in the evening for those kind of devices. And she loves them. They're very addicting. She prefers it to everything else, but we don't allow too much of that. And I think most good parents are very good at controlling that. So, and she's out there in the garden right now. She doesn't realize that it's work. You know, she's out there in the garden with us when we're there, and she loves to just be around her parents, you know? So, most of the time I'm just sitting in front of the computer though, working on Divi. But it's fun to go out and look at the gardens and watch stuff grow. It's really, really miraculous when you think about this tiny little seed and how it turns into what it turns into and how quickly it happens. It's just, we're so used to it. It doesn't seem like the miracle that it really is.
Yeah. And it's like the most primal and natural thing that you can do, like literally grow food to support your family, your offspring, your loved ones, like everybody together. It's the most, primal concept of life, which is pretty fantastic. Well, I'd love to see, you know, something in the near future. I know Divi, there's like multiple projects right now where people accept Divi. So there's like Divi syrup, there's Divi coffee. There's a few of these different concepts. It would be really cool if there was one around farming where people would be able to do something like that.
Well, we're going to be building soon something called Permatech. Do you know about Permatech?
Yeah, you told me a little bit about it, and Nick.
Yeah, so we'll have here at the farm, we'll have a digital nomad space, and people can come down there. We're only going to accept cryptocurrencies, you know, Divi and cryptos from our friends, Bitcoin and Litecoin, and a few others, and people will be able to experience all this farm stuff, and we'll see how it goes. But there's a lot of people that are asking to volunteer. They want to work there. They want to be the manager. They just want to stay there the minute it's open. It's going to be really successful, I'm sure. But we just got a really, really nice telescope that we can have out there, where you can like hook up your laptop and take pictures of the moons of Jupiter and all kinds of cool stuff. And that's going to be fun. And we're going to have a virtual reality room and recording studio, all kinds of cool stuff for all the nerds, right? A maker space with a 3D printer, all the cool tech stuff. But we'll also have, we'll probably have either an aquaponics or a hydroponics, because people are very interested in that. And we'll have places where, you know, people can do farm tours and learn all about permaculture and see different types of construction, how to build houses with natural materials, or using high tech solutions that, you know, make really low energy houses using more high tech materials, solar panels and really nicely insulated glass and all kinds of things you can build. You can build eco-friendly with glass and aluminum and cement, or you can do it with bamboo and mud, right? There's everything in between.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, for everybody listening in, you can rewind and listen to all of the knowledge that Jeff just dropped, because there is a lot going on there. And for everybody else, check out the show notes. I'm going to try and include as many resources as I can. I'll look you up YouTube, and hopefully Jeff and I can collab on finding some really good resources to link on the show notes. And if you guys are listening in, definitely be sure to check that out. I think now more than ever, this is really, really important. And above all, it's fun to experiment with stuff like this, just like Jeff was saying. But thanks so much, Jeff, for sharing your wisdom. And it's very, very valuable at this point in time, and will be even more over the next coming months and years.